Good evening. Welcome back to the Meditation 101. This is session 2. Is there anyone here who did not come last week? Okay. All right. Okay. All right. So let's start with a short meditation. So just sit comfortably with your back straight. And I'll sound the bell once to begin and once to end. Okay, for those who were here last time, did anyone set up a meditation place in their home? Anyone? Did anyone start their meditation practice at home? Oh, great. Okay, would anyone like to share their experience, make a comment or anything? Can you wait for the mic? Okay, thanks.
I'm just still finding it hard to concentrate for very long right now, so I'm trying to do short meditations.
Right, excellent. Okay, thank you. So I'm going to do a very short review of the first session, especially since about half of you weren't here. Okay, so meditation, in Tibetan, the word is gom, meaning to become familiar with. So the purpose is to become familiar with a virtuous object. And what we call the purpose and the power of meditation is to reduce negative thought, negative mind. So it's not just sitting and thinking nothing, because it's, you know, probably impossible to just stop all thought. And concentration is a type of meditation where you focus single-mindedly or single-pointedly on one object. And it's in order to complete all the stages of shamatha or calm abiding, you keep that same object, whatever it is, that you, the one of your choice, and stick to that object. What we do is, just as we are training a wild beast, we tie our very powerful elephant mind to a post, which is the meditation object, with the rope of mindfulness. And whenever, you know, we stray, we just, again, enforce our mindfulness and bring it back. And we, in order to have productive meditation, we have to have this object, as I mentioned before. It said that if trying to meditate without an object is like a person without arms trying to climb a very steep mountain. And then we talked about setting up this meditation place at home, because, you know, hopefully you're not meditating just in this class, you're doing it at home or at work. And I didn't mention this last week, but when I was meditating at work, what I did was I downloaded a meditation bell and set it up so that it would sound like every half hour or every hour. And so when that happened, I would just stop whatever I was doing and just breathe, you know, like a couple of two or three mindful breaths, and then I continued working. So it's sort of like a meditation practice that you can do at work. And then at home, you try to find a quiet and comfortable place to go back to, and some place that, you know, hopefully will develop into a place that uplifts you when you go. You have your cushion or the chair that you are you sit on. And at first, as this gentleman mentioned, you start with very short sessions, frequent short sessions. And then when you are, your mind is more stable and more surfaceable, you extend your sessions. You have fewer, longer sessions. And then try to, yes, ma'am, would you, hold on a second, sorry. And also it helps me to hear because I have a hearing problem. Would you raise your hand again? Yeah.
What is the purpose of the dinghy bell? Is it necessary to get one?
To get a bell? Oh, no.
But what is the purpose?
It's sort of, to me, it helps me, it centers me. You know, when I hear it, at first, also, it relaxes me right away. To me, it was very, very relaxing to do that, to sound the bell.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have one when I started. In fact, I didn't have anything except a book. And so it really, it is not necessary at all.
Oh, okay.
But it, you know, like if you were at work and you heard this bell, it's like a reminder. You know,
okay.
That to bring, to do your meditation practice. Because it's, you know, it's very, you know, it's hard to think about it while you're working, when you're concentrating on your work. And you see, there's a, okay.
Maybe everybody knows, but there are wonderful apps you can download, and you just set them up to gong whenever. So you don't have to buy one, but you get the same sound. And it is very helpful.
Yes, it is. And there's some.
The object or focal point, is it physical or is it mental?
That's a very good question. I will go through that probably on another session, because that's a very good question. It takes a while to answer. But yes, it is. It starts out, it could be whatever you want, but usually it is something physical. But the problem is that you don't want it to be a visual meditation object. It needs to be mental. So it starts out as a physical thing, like a pebble or a flower or a photo of maybe your children or something like that. Something that, you know, you look at and it immediately calms you. It could be your breath. That's physical, even though you can't see it. And then, but the point is that it, you look at it and you see it visually, physically, but you try to recreate it in your mind. So it's actually a mental object. So there it is. Okay. All right. So then we talked about the meditation posture. It's 7 points. You start with your legs. So if you're sitting on a cushion, you cross your legs. You try to keep your back higher than your knees. And if you're sitting on a chair, have your feet, when you're meditating, have your feet flat on the floor or on a cushion if it's more comfortable to have it like that. And then your back is straight, straight as you can, just thinking as a stack of coins or as if there is a string going through your body, out through the crown of your head. You know, you're trying to be straight. And your arms are away from your torso, with hands right on left with thumbs touching, or if you prefer, you can put them on your knees. Your eyes are either slightly closed, slightly open, unfocused before you, and you relax your jaw, your mouth, your shoulders, try to make them as level as you can. And your tongue is on the roof of your mouth on the back of your teeth, and that sort of helps with, you know, your saliva. And then your head is sort of tilted forward. Okay? And then we did a few counting breath exercises last week, and that's simply exhaling, inhaling, counting one. Exhale, inhale, count two. And you continue to do that until the number that you choose to have. Like if you want to try to count to breathe and count your breath all the way to the number 7, then that's your goal. And then you can start back at 1 again if you like and go to 7 again. And then if you're doing that and you get distracted, you go back to number 1 again. In order to do that. That helps. It also helps to think in your mind, like in when you're inhaling, out when you're exhaling, you know, in, out, and that also helps you focus. And then what we do, again, is to maintain an awareness of the object. And right now we're sort of dabbling with breathing meditation. So we try to focus on the air going in and out of your nostrils, or perhaps the air, you know, that cool sensation there. Or you might feel just the sensation of your abdomen rising and falling as you breathe, whatever it is. But you try to stick to that object. And so what we're doing while we're meditating, as I said, is not just sitting, but we're trying to cultivate a familiarity with this meditation object, especially if it's a virtuous object, one that calms your mind. And so that's one thing that I like you to do is, there's right here.
What counts as a distraction if you feel a thought or you know, think of a thought that arises and you dismiss it? Do you still count that as a distraction? Or if you start to get pictures in your mind but you don't follow the thoughts that those pictures, would you count those as a distraction?
No, they're not, because those thoughts will come up naturally anyway. But if you don't follow them, if you just label them as a thought or whatever, then and then let them go, then, well, technically it is a distraction, but it's not a distracting because you bring your mind back to the meditation object. And at first it's very strong, those distractions, but then they get fewer and fewer, you know, as your practice improves. So it helps. You may notice, maybe not everyone, but we have ongoing, continuous chatter or conversations in our mind almost all the time. You know, we're always thinking, we're planning, we're multitasking, and so forth. So you'll find that with this practice, that those ongoing conversations will settle and they'll become fewer and fewer. And, you know, of course, things happen. Problems arise all the time, you know. But then, so your mind will start churning. You know, we're always trying to fix things. We're always trying to solve our problems. But then when it does, then gradually your emotions, your conversation, your thinking will start settling. and you go back to that awareness, that mindfulness of your object again. So it'll be like, it's like, that's what happens, especially if you can do it in the on the cushion, then you try to bring that to your day-to-day life when you're off the cushion, between sessions. And that's what it's for. So that's the point, to make your mind, you know, follow that virtuous object, becoming more familiar with that. And then that leads to, you know, in other words, you're doing this concentration meditation, and it makes and leads to a calm mind, and it makes your mind and your physical body more pliable, more pliant. And then when it does, then because you yourself have become more calm and more peaceful, it helps your family, it helps your interactions with your pet, your coworkers, your community. It just makes, that's the way you sort of learn how to send out this positive thoughts, positive energy in the world by calming your own mind. And so in the beginning, and for a long time, your mental ability to focus on this meditation object is very weak. So what I'd like you to do, first of all, is to decide on this meditation object. And then, it may take a while, because when you do, you don't want to change the object, because that is a distraction. Like, for example, if you decide that you want to focus on a flower, a white flower, for example, don't change it to a pink flower or a red flower or a different kind of flower. You know, like if you want it to be a pink carnation, keep it that pink carnation. You know, or if you want to focus on a picture, say, of your dear grandmother that you love, then, you know, keep it there. And don't change it to your grandfather or to an aunt or an uncle. You know, try to keep that same image there to focus on until you've actually cultivated a very strong concentration. And the when you know that that's happened is when you can concentrate on that mental object, your meditation object, whenever you want to and as long as you want to, without any distraction. So, I mean, people have the capability of doing that, keeping their concentration for days, for months. It's possible to do that. So, anyway, right now, what we're trying to do is we're trying to hone in our mindfulness, that mindfulness rope, so that it supports our concentration, our focus on their object. Because right now it's, you know, it's very wild. But we don't want to be too loose, and we don't want to be too tight. We don't want to have just a little support or little, you know, pull on that rope, or too little. So the mental faculty that helps us to do this is what is called introspection or vigilance. It's that guard in the back of your mind that can see you meditating and say, ah, you know, you're starting to get sleepy, or the object is stopping, you know, it's not as clear as it used to be, you know, try to improve the clarity. It helps with your clarity and your stability. It helps you to strengthen or loosen your mindfulness. Because once the object is clear and stable, then you don't need that. If that becomes a distraction, you just let it go. You don't need to have all this introspection or vigilance. You can loosen that also. So there are two distractions, two main distractions that they talk about. One is excitement and the other is laxity. Excitement is when your mind scatters to an attractive object. Like, you know, you're sitting and you're thinking of the coffee that you want to have because it's in the morning and it's before breakfast. And, you know, you're ready for your breakfast, you know, coffee, maybe some toast, you know. So that's excitement. Laxity is when your mind becomes more lethargic and the object is not clear. It loses its clarity, and then it can even lead to sleepiness. So those are the two main distractions that they talk about. So what we do, the antidote is vigilance or introspection. That helps us. Okay, so now I'd like to introduce nine-round breathing. And the purpose of nine-round breathing is to get rid of the imbalanced energy that's stuck in our channels. So just like in a physical body, we have countless nerves going through our body. In this tradition, it's said that there are 72,000 channels that pervade the body, and it's non-physical. And through these channels or pathways, mind rides on energy, just like a rider rides on a horse. And when your mind is not balanced, not concentrating, then it happens. It becomes imbalanced. It's scattered. It's like very small creeks, they're very weak. But when you channel it into one, it becomes very powerful. And the way to do that is by focusing on an object. And when the mind is balanced, it becomes pliable and it can be turned to something positive. So we balance our mind through concentration by focusing on something. So the nine-round meditation is the meditation that is usually done first. First we do the nine-round meditation, and then the breathing meditation, and then maybe a more advanced meditation. So that's what we do. Now I just explained how to do it. First of all, you check your mind. And see, is it positive? Is it negative? Is it neutral? So if it is neutral, then through this nine-round breathing practice, you just breathe normally, naturally. But if your mind is negative, you breathe out forcefully. Okay? And then you start by this is going to be backwards. I can't do it backwards to help you. But you take the ring finger on your left hand, and then you block your left nostril, and you breathe in through your right nostril, slowly, deeply, like this. And then you switch, and you block the right nostril, and exhale through your left. And you do that two more times, so that's rounds 1 through 3. And then the next three rounds 4 through 6, you take the ring finger of your right hand and you block your right nostril, so the hand is right next to the first, you're the closest nostril, okay? And then you block that and you breathe in slowly, deeply through your left nostril. Then you block the other side and exhale through the right nostril. And you do that two times. And then for the last three rounds, 7 through 9, you breathe in through both nostrils, slowly, deeply, and then exhale through your both nostrils. Okay? Any questions? Got that? Okay, so let's try that from the very beginning. Okay? So first, start with our left hand and block your left nostril. Okay, and if your mind is still negative, then you can just repeat that. And keep repeating it until your mind becomes neutral. Okay? So then the next meditation that we go into is the breathing meditation. And then you can either think to yourself in, out, or you can do the counting meditation. So we start with our motivation. And, you know, I guess I didn't mention this. This is for the people who've never been here before and are new to meditation. When you're sitting and concentrating on your breath, thoughts will pop up. You think about perhaps extending the past, creating the future. You're thinking about projects, the things that happened at work, and so forth. You'll hear people shifting, you know, traffic going by, snoring. And if that happens, just label it as sound and just let it go. Okay? And bring your focus back to your breath. So by taking time to do this meditation practice, may I develop my mind and become a wiser and kinder person in order to be of benefit to all beings. With dedication, may the positive energy I have created by practicing this meditation exercise bring peace and well-being to myself, my family, friends, and all others in every moment of every day. As I mentioned earlier, quite a few times, the mind is powerful as a wild elephant, and it needs constant attention, just as you would never take your hands off, your eyes off your child, a small child, a toddler. So, and we always have to protect our mind. And why is that? Because everything comes down to mind, our attitude, our perception of our outer world, and even our inner world. In other words, happiness depends on our mind, not on our external world. A calm, loving, compassionate mind brings peace of mind. So just imagine a life where you always focus on only the positive side of every situation, of every object that you see. Then everyone likes to approach. People are always smiling. People are positive. Perhaps you know someone like that at home or at work. And no one can destroy your happiness when you have that attitude. And nothing can. And in no situation. So in order to develop this mind, we train ourselves in this meditation practice. We do this to protect our own mind, which also, you know, as a result, also benefits others as well. So in other words, all appearances are reflections of our own mind. Our pain and difficulties are from our internal and external illusions. It's like we're watching a magic show. We shouldn't look at things, or things aren't as solid as they appear to be, first of all. You know, even in scientifically, everything is changing every moment. All our cells and our body and the things around us are constantly dying or being reborn, being created. So it's always in a state of flux. So things are always changing, just like our minds are always changing. You know, someone might say, oh, you know, 10 years ago you were like this, but you're not like that now, you know. You might probably have changed in certain likes, dislikes, interests, and so forth. So when we encounter an object outside of ourselves, we look at it and we think that it's either attractive, unattractive, or neutral. And then based on that, we experience a pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feeling. So when the object is attractive, then we want to have more of it. We become attached to it. And that craving for this object leads to a more intense, powerful attachment called grasping. And what happens is we project qualities that sometimes may not be on there, on that object. And we think that it's inherently true. It's always true. We think that it's true for everyone, all the time. And the problem is that we believe it to be 100% true. You know, for example, we think that everyone loves your favorite dessert. But that's not true. Not everyone likes that certain, you know, flavor of cake or whatever. And then if it were always true, then no matter how much you ate, it would still be pleasurable. But maybe after eating the third cake, you know, with all the pieces, you might not like it anymore. So in her book, Comfortable with Uncertainty, Venerable Pema Chodron writes, when you feel craving, you could be sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon, but all you can see is this piece of chocolate cake that you're craving. With aversion, you're sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon, and all you can hear is angry words you said to someone 10 years ago. With ignorance, you're sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon with a paper bag over your head. Each of these three poisons has the power to capture you so completely that you don't even perceive what's in front of you. So when we narrow our mind, in other words, when we have these strong opinions, then small things can easily disturb our mind. So what we need to do is we need to step back and look at it with a broader perspective. See it from other people's point of view. Be more objective and less subjective. And wonder, you know, is your own perspective really true? And Hesonius says, the human mind can become stronger than steel. To train the mind, you must exercise patience and determination to shape that steel. With patience and practice and time, change will come. Do not give up. If you are hopeful and determined, you will always find some measure of success. Winning the gold medal does not matter. You will have tried your best. So, he mentioned mind is like steel. It can become like steel. Well, steel, if it's in a big blob, just sinks into the water. But if you shape that steel, you pound it, and then curve it, spread it out, and make it into a boat, then with that boat, you can sit in it with oars and cross this ocean of suffering. So we have, you know, an opportunity, a responsibility to work with our mind, whether we want to have a happy, positive life, you know, and a calm, peaceful life, or do we want to have a negative life where we're always, you know, bumping into things, people, and other opinions. So I'd like to do another meditation. It's called Mind Like the Sky Meditation. And I forgot to mention that all of these meditations are on our website, you know, kadamacenter.org. Go to Spiritual Program, Introductory Courses or Classes, and then Meditation 101. And all the handouts are there. Okay, so get into your meditation posture and try to relax all the tension in your body and think of your own altruistic motivation. And you allow your mind to be attentive and observant of whatever comes to notice, regardless of what it is. Don't identify with the mental elements arising. Simply observe them like a tourist. Allow them to arise as you observe them and pass away without getting involved. Just be aware. Allow your mindful attention to expand, to encompass your entire sphere of experience, of consciousness. Forget that there is an observer and something being observed. Simply imagine your experience, your consciousness, as being just like the sky. Completely clear, vast, spacious, without end. Concentrate on this experience. Identify with the experience. Clarity, spaciousness, awareness. Our minds are completely clear, just as the sky is completely clear. The light of the sun shines down on us through the clear sky. Our awareness and wisdom shine through the clarity of our minds. Sometimes clouds fill the sky and obscure the sunshine. But the sky doesn't get upset. The sky doesn't identify with the clouds. The sky doesn't judge. The clouds just pass through the spaciousness of the sky. They come and they go. The clarity and spaciousness of the sky isn't compromised by the clouds. They just arise and pass. Our minds are clear and aware, spacious like the sky. When a thought or an emotion, an idea or an image or a sensation arises in your mind, just observe it. Let it arise and let it pass. Each thought, each mental event, just like a cloud, your mind the sky. Concentrate on that experience of space and bliss. Whenever we identify with and are carried away uncontrollably by a thought or a feeling, we lose any awareness of the spacious clarity of our mind, of the vast, clear, and knowing nature of the mind within which each thought or feeling occurs. Our perspective becomes small and constricted. It is as if all there is are clouds. We've lost the sky. We lose that wonderful open spaciousness. When we can simply observe these thoughts and feelings arising without getting involved, when we can identify with the sky instead of with the clouds, then we can reside in that spacious purity of our basic clarity of mind. Calm, clear, peaceful, open spaciousness. Without agitation, without delusions, without anxiety and distress. Without dissatisfaction and attachments and aversions. Okay, does anyone have any questions about this exercise that we just did or about anything else that was covered? Okay, so as this mind like the sky, the meditation practice that we just did, the mind in our tradition is clear and knowing. So what it does is reflects exactly what things are, as if it were a mirror. And this is when all those negativities and obscurations have calmed down. So basically, it's clear and knowing. And we can develop that mind exponentially so that it can become, in our tradition, omniscient. That's what we call Buddha nature. So we shouldn't identify with these negative thoughts that come through our mind. We're not our thoughts. If we were, then there probably wouldn't be much hope for us. And then, of course, again, that's that thought that things are permanent, unchanging. I know, there are some traditions about, a divine being coming up from nothing and abiding and everlasting and so forth, and that's perfectly fine. The tradition works with that. But we're talking about our minds. And in this tradition, it can be developed so that this calmness, the peace, and the positive states of mind are the only states of mind. And it has been done. Millions of times, by millions of people, millions of sentient beings. From the record, we know that it is perfectly possible. So it is just a matter of practice. And so that's what we need to do. We need to go home and we have to, make a commitment to start this practice and continue it. And, like a steady stream of water. And eventually, with practice, with persistence, those negative thoughts, those fears, anxieties, whatever, will subside, will not come up as often, and you can calm your mind. You know, as I mentioned in the last session, I started when I was going through a very difficult period in my life, when I was getting divorced, and then I had to find, support my children. And so it was a very difficult time, and then I met, the meditation practices, and it just was amazing because nothing else would really help at all. I went everywhere. I tried to do everything, and tried self-help books, Chicken Soup for the Soul, all those books. I read all those books at the time, and I was trying to find something that would calm my mind because of all the fear, anxiety, and probably, I don't know, I didn't feel any hate, but I think it was just mostly fear and anxiety and anger. There was anger there. I showed lots of anger. As soon as I started the practice, it was just like magic. It just really stopped it. And immediately, you can get an effect. As soon as you start concentrating, because it does produce calm and peaceful mind, when you're concentrating. It's just that you have to figure out a way of doing it between meditation sessions. When you're off the cushion, when you're off the meditation chair, you have to learn how to bring it into your life. And for that, some meditation practice will help, but you really need to go into more depth into finding out why these things are happening. And for that, you probably need a more deeper spiritual practice, spiritual teachings. So this type of meditation practice is existed even before the time of Shakyamuni Buddha. You know, I think the Hindus and, you know, other religious groups already had been doing this. And then he just made it, Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical Buddha, practiced it with other ascetics. And the asceticism did not work. And he meditated for 6 years under a tree, and he only ate one grain of rice per day. And he nearly starved. He nearly died. But then he found out, that wasn't working. And neither was his life before he started, you know, as being this prince with just, tremendous luxury, never having to do anything, you know, that he knew that didn't work either. Those two extremes did not work, so he chose the middle way, and then after he became enlightened, you know, after about 49 days, he started teaching this way. So this concentration meditation, the calm abiding shamatha practice, is not new. It's not just solely, you know, Buddhist practice. Let's see. So we just have a few more minutes. Would anyone like to share their experience of meditating so far in this session? No? Okay. Yes. Can you wait for them now? Right here in front?
So far, everything has been...
Can you put it close to your mouth? Yeah.
Is that better?
Is that even closer?
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better. Perfect.
So the first meditations went really nice for me. I was able to stay in the moment in the groove. But the last one was like the monkey mind. I went everywhere and couldn't keep focus at all. You know, it was nothing. It was just everywhere. I mean, thoughts and feelings and experiences, and I nodded off a time or two. Is that normal?
I would think so. I think in the beginning the sky would be a very difficult meditation object. But I think the people who wrote this book probably wanted to introduce a way of explaining what the mind was, you know, and that not to identify with those thoughts and so forth, you know, whatever the material was, and they wanted to do it in the mode of technique of meditation practice. But, you know, it is also a valid meditation practice that we can do later on. I agree that the sky, mind like a sky, is a very difficult one. But on the other hand, maybe other people have different experiences, because it's sort of relaxing. It's very nice to know that that's what your mind really is, you know, completely calm and, you know, clear, and that all those clouds and things that are in there, you know, are not really us. Was there another question someplace?
It was kind of a comment type thing about the mind and the sky. I mean, isn't that like the point of the meditation, right? Like accepting the fact that your mind wanders? Is it not? Misreading that?
Right, because it's wandering to those clouds, and we're identifying with those clouds that are coming through. Yes, and we're sort of moving our attention away from the clarity, the clearness, the spaciousness of the sky. So yes, that's very nice.
Also, this was like the greatest thing I've done all day, so thank you.
Oh, yay.
Mine is a two-pronged question. First one is, how many days, if we start now, let's assume as a beginner, maybe every day, maybe 15 minutes or something, and we all know mind is like a monkey, right? It goes everywhere. after how many sessions it stabilizes after like 15 days, 15 times, 20 days, or it's going to be 6 months.
Right. They say that under the right conditions, and they're very difficult conditions, like, you know, I don't know if I mention it later, but for calm abiding, they say that you can do it in 6 months. If you're in a, you know, dwelling in a, you know, quiet environment, probably away from the city and so forth, all those, it really depends. Everyone is different. You know, everyone is on a different path. Everyone has different situations, you know, life events that are happening. So you can't really say that. What they do is stages is like, for example, if you can meditate on this object without distraction for 5 minutes, then you're on this level. You know, if you can do it like this for 15 minutes, then you're on level two or whatever. It's like that. So it's different. People have progressed at different rates. And you shouldn't judge yourself on that because, you know, someone may have perfect conditions. You know, maybe like me, you know, they're retired and so no problem and everything is good, you know, in my life, you know, I'm not sick or anything and I have conditions. So it's fine, but maybe there's someone who's very young and very smart, brilliant, but maybe they just started a new job or maybe they have small children. Very difficult to be able to, you know, concentrate and focus and have even 5 minutes to herself, you know. So it's different, you know. So I can't tell you that you're going to be able to, you know, concentrate single-pointedly on your object of choice for 15 solid minutes within 1 month. I just can't say that. It's, you know, and it's up to you. So at the beginning, try fewer sessions. It's probably 5 minutes rather than 15, but do a lot. You know, a lot of them. Try to bring an awareness, a mindfulness of what you're doing during the day. So you may not be sitting there trying to think of your object, for example, like if it were a pebble. You know, you wouldn't be thinking of that, but you'll be thinking about, you know, trying to be kinder, you know, person, or like closing a door quietly rather than slamming it. You know, that's some kind of mindfulness of your awareness, you know, your body action, your bodily actions, and your speech. You know, you might try to listen without judging and so forth. So there's different ways of doing this meditation practice, bring it into the rest of your between sessions.
And what is the significance of music in the meditation?
Music, some people meditate on sound. Like they might meditate on a mantra, you know, or it may be a slogan. I don't know about listening to a symphony or things like that. Maybe I'm not a good one to ask because we're not supposed to listen to music. We're not supposed to play music and it's one of our vows. But I would think that if it would produce a calm and peaceful mind, that would be good. But it certainly would be hard, you know, if somebody stopped the music, you know, or suddenly had loud music that you didn't like, or if you were listening to it and then someone interrupted. So you have to be careful, you know, not to let those things upset you. And then maybe, what if you were on a deserted island and you didn't have that music with you? You forgot it or whatever, then that's not going to be helpful. You know, so you have to, it's nice to have that mental, you know, object. That's a very good question. I'll have to ask my teacher.
There are meditation music everywhere.
Right. Oh, there is music, yeah. And then there's mantras and so forth. I try to keep it real simple, I would think. Because some people, I remember one person who wanted to meditate on the home he grew up in. That's a pretty big meditation object. I mean, monks meditate on a mandala, which is like a palace practically. And, there are many, many, many elements. And that's very, very difficult. And so a house at the beginning as your first meditation object, that's a lot of stuff in there. You could probably narrow it down to like one picture, one little object in your home that brings you back, to the feeling that you had when you were at home. But to have a whole house, that would be a really difficult object. So the sound also, maybe you need to, narrow that down too. Not make it too involved. I would get carried away, personally, with the music. Any other questions? Okay, so for our homework, try to practice, a few times a week, and your limits, try to keep it steady. And say if you're extremely busy, something comes up on the, certain day, then I understand, you might not be able to do it, but that doesn't mean that you should stop. Try the next day. And I'll discuss, so if you'll try like mind like the sky, mind like the ocean, you might try nine bound breathing. And then if you would like to share, the experiences you have, your problems, or your successes, you're please welcome to do that. And next week I'll talk about types of meditation, different objects of meditation, obstacles and their antidotes. It's really, I think I did that today. And meditation on transforming negative experiences into the positive. Okay? Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. And if you would please sign your name on the sign-up sheet if you haven't done so already. Thank you.